a little story I heard not too long ago. There was this feller named Hadley, and he died. And his wife wanted to do something kind of nice for him, and so she went into town to buy an obituary for him in the newspaper. And of course, she was very, very frugal. And in her conversations, the first thing that came up with the editor was, what's the cost? And he said, well, it's $15 for the first 5 words, and then it's 10 cents a word after that. She says, well, what if I only need 2 words? And he says, sorry, it's still $15. And had some discussion, and finally she decided she'd buy the 5 words. Out of curiosity, the editor asked her what she could do for 2 words, and she said, I'd say Hadley died. He said, well, what can you do for 5 words then? She said, Hadley died, Cadillac for sale. That probably better get on with talk here. I just didn't change it. I want to talk just a little bit about some supplementation work, and I like to start off just a little bit about talking about the nutrient requirements of the cow so that we can maybe understand why we might supplement. This is a figure that shows the energy requirements of a cow. I've simply put this on a reproduction basis, if you will, show the energy requirement at calving, and then show it through weaning, and then as we increase back towards pregnancy again. The requirement's probably about 20 megacalories right at calving or shortly after calving, and then it's probably at weaning, assuming we wean at 5-6 months, it's going to probably be about half that or about 10 megacalories. So we have a much higher requirement if the cow's lactating, and then the requirement increases with pregnancy as we get closer towards calving. The other thing that becomes a pretty important issue as we deal with supplementation is just simply what the forage can supply. So we've got an issue of what the cow needs and then what the forage can supply. At the Goodmanson Ranch in the Sandhills, we've done quite a bit of work to try and describe the diet so that we could understand what the forage could contribute. The thing that's probably really important to look at, and it's true of just almost all the forage systems we work in, as we get out into the late summer and fall, we see a pretty sharp drop in the content of protein and energy in the diets. The figure you see here shows the protein, and you'll see that when we get out there in the fall, we're probably going to work with something around 5 to 6, maybe 7% protein. The other thing that becomes kind of important in terms of not just what the forage has, but what's going on inside of the animal. How's the animal able to utilize the forages? We've done quite a bit of work to try and understand the animal and what's going on in the forage. This is maybe just a little bit basic type things, but what you have here is a representation of intake of an animal through the summer and into the fall, even into the winter. And you'll notice that the intake tends to be low when the forages are lush and immature. Then it increases through that midsummer period, then it starts to decline again as we get into the fall. Now, that lower intake in the early spring, summer is not too critical because the forages will be very high in protein and energy. In other words, we're going to have a 12 or 14% protein diet, a digestibility or TDN probably in the mid-60s. When we get out in that August-September period, it starts to be pretty critical because we're now working with something that might be 54 or 5% digestible or a TDN of 54 or 55, and now the protein's only 5 or 6%. So when we start reducing the intake of the lower quality forage, it becomes a pretty critical issue. One of the things that's causing the effects on the forage intake is the passage rate, just simply the rate at which the forage moves through the animal. You'll see there that as we start from early summer into the fall, that the passage rate becomes much slower, which means that the forages stay in the rumen or in the gut and they occupy space. They're occupying space, the animal can't eat quite so much. So what happens is we see an increase in fill, and the blue line you see would be the total fill of both fluids and solids, and the red line would be the solids. So what happens is we can have a pretty critical time when we get out in the fall. The nutrients are pretty slow. The animal's full. She can't eat anymore. It can be kind of a crisis. So we could say that we feed a supplement to basically fix two things. One would be a deficiency in the forages. In other words, we could just substitute for what the forage may not have. The other thing that's not evident in these slides is when we get into these low-quality forage diets, one of the things that is a problem is low nitrogen, and it causes the cow to eat less, and it causes the passage rate to be slower. So if we simply put a little bit of protein in, we could actually increase the amount of grass they would eat or the forage. We can basically help the animal then by increasing the value of the forage or by complementing or replacing the things that might be deficient in the diet. One of the things that becomes pretty critical as we look into that late summer fall period becomes milk production. We usually get quite concerned about milk production at calving time. We recognize that sometimes it's pretty hard to hold a cow's condition. What I would submit to you is that maybe one of the more critical times is the lactation on a March calving cow when we get out into September, October, November. One of the things that we found to be kind of important is what kind of cow it is or the amount of milk that they can produce. While we were at Miles City, I did a study where we looked at two very distinct biological types of cattle. It wasn't a breed study. We had cows that we knew gave different amounts of milk. What you see here, the green line would represent a composite cow that had pretty high production. The bottom line would represent a Hereford cow that we knew had lower production. The high production cow, the peak milk production, is about 23 pounds a day. The Hereford cow was about 15 pounds. But look out there in the fall, you'll see that difference is maintained all the way out into September. Basically, what you see is that composite cow is producing in September what that Hereford cow is producing in May or April. So you've got a very, very different type of cow. So we look at just the impacts on them. This was a situation over a couple of years where we just simply looked to see what happened to the cow. That line that says zero is just the body condition score. It just represents where the cows went on. If you look at the top line or that purple line, that represents the Hereford cow. And you'll see there was an initial gain in condition, and then they maintained condition on out into September. But look at the composite cow. We saw a little bit of gain in condition through about June, and then they kind of started losing condition through July and August. And then look what happens from about August through September. Almost a full condition score comes off that cow. It's a very critical situation. So one of the things you have to be pretty aware of is what kind of cow we're working with. And the more milk we've got in our cows, the more need there's going to be to either intervene with things like weaning or with supplementation. The cows with lower production are going to fit the resource a little better, probably don't need to have the added nutrients added. Now this is the protein of what we would see at Miles City, Montana. If you'll notice that red area, I've just simply blocked a pretty critical area. It's an area where we're working with a 6 or 7% protein. That's the area when we get out in September, October, and it's just pretty darn critical what's going on. What kind of cow we've got, how long she's been milking, so on. Those are issues that need to be addressed. The other thing that if you compare this, if you can remember back to the slide I showed for the Sandhills, you're going to have differences depending on whether you're in Wyoming, South Dakota, or the Sandhills, and it becomes pretty important to know your forage base for your individual needs and for your ranch. Let me just show you a couple of quick studies that we've done to try and understand weaning. The purpose that weaning becomes so important is probably one of the best tools to manage body condition. So when we think about managing body condition, one of the best options is weaning. So let me just show you a couple of things. In the Sandhills, we did a two-year study, and we started about the 18th of August, and we weaned calves at every 2 weeks until about November 24th. And then what we did is just look at the response to both the cow and calf. And in the interest of time, I'm just going to show you the cow. But the results were that for every 2 weeks later we weaned the cow lost a tenth of a condition score. It's just a pretty nice tool, so you could basically take, if you're going to wean 10 weeks later, you're going to lose about a half a condition score. That's about the way that works out. My experience in Miles City tells me that's not too bad of an estimate. Probably about a tenth of a condition score for every 2 weeks later you wean after about September. Might be just a little more or less, but pretty good estimate. About a tenth of a score for every 2 weeks you wean later. This is a study we did at Miles City, and we were basically looking at, can we correct this loss of condition by feeding supplement or by weaning? The two bars on the left would be, the white bar would be cows that were weaned in September. The green bar, the bar below it, would be cows that were weaned in December. Looking at the difference between September and 1st of December weanings, a little over a full body condition score, just demonstrating how critical weaning is. The two bars on the right, the red one would represent cows that received no supplement during that period of time. Keep in mind that some, both dry cows and lactating cows, there was no interaction, so they're cooled. And then the yellow bar, the one above, represents a slight gain. And again, almost a full condition score difference in whether we fed protein or not. In this case, the protein was about a half a pound of crude protein a day. Works out to be about a pound of a 40, something in that range. This is a study that I want to just shift gears a little bit and show you three studies that we worked on where we applied these concepts to a system. These are studies where we've taken the animals for full years. We've looked at what happened to the calf. The cow got some economics. Dick Clark's been working with us, and we've been able to do some things that become more meaningful. It's more than just looking at did the cow gain or lose, what was the bottom line on the economics of the ranch. This first study we had, we looked at August weaning or we looked at November weaning. And within each of those weaning dates, we had protein supplement during the winter or no protein. Our hypothesis when we started was if we wean later, cows would be thinner, they're going to need the supplement more. So in part, this study was to test that concept. So we looked at what you see here is 4 years of data. The cows, once they entered this experiment, they were all three-year-old cows. We did not change the way they were treated. So they were treated the same year after year. Keep in mind that during that winter period, they're on range and they're receiving about a half a pound of crude protein to meet their needs. The red line would show if we weaned in August. The blue line shows if we weaned in November. You'll see at calving time, there's about a half a condition score difference in those cows. But notice that there was a difference all the time in the way those cows looked throughout the year. The cows that we weaned later were consistently thinner than the cows that we weaned earlier. This was something that really surprised us. The pregnancy rates were the same for those two groups of cows. Right at about 95% pregnancy, the statistics show that those means should have been the same. So even though we had some pretty thin cows at certain times of the year, the pregnancy rates were the same. We think that part of that explanation would be if you look at the far right of that graph, see how the condition turned up very quickly, and the high point of that line out in June would be where the bulls went in. So you can see that even though we had some low conditions, the cows did recover. Rule of thumb for us probably is a condition score in about 3 to 4 weeks in May and June in the Sandhills. Next slide shows the effects of the protein supplement. Keep in mind we're only feeding protein for December, January, February. There's about 90 days of protein in there. All the cows received hay from about March 1st to about the 1st of May. Here again, see the impacts of the supplement. Quite a difference in body condition score calving. Here again, no effect on pregnancy. The pregnancy rates were considered to be the same. So in both cases, we've had a drastic effect on body condition, whether we weaned or whether we supplemented, but it did not translate into an effect on pregnancy rate. These are the cows, just to show you what we're talking about. The cows on the left, their calves were weaned in November. The ones on the right were weaned in August. The ones on the top had no protein during the winter. The ones on the bottom had protein. I think you can see quite a striking contrast between those cows just based on those two treatments. Now the next slide shows the effects of cows that had their calves weaned in November. And you've got a shot at calving and one right before calving. On the bottom would be just before calving. And you've got beyond the right, they had no supplement. On the left, they had supplement. But look up in that right-hand corner and you can see the kind of cows we were calving. Basically pretty thin, about a condition score, 3.5 to 4.5 where most of them fell. Keep in mind, though, the pregnancy rate or the rebreed on those cows is about 95%. Even though they're thin, the rebreed was pretty high on those cows. Now let's just look at some economics and see. He's got a couple of weaning dates. We can just skip the weaning information. Why don't you just skip it? You do see some differences in weaning, about 15 pounds if you fed protein. But the economics are probably a little bit more critical here. And we just went through trying to understand about the cost of these systems. Got the cost for grazing. If you look over there at the right, the costs are higher if you wean in November, and that is because you've got the calf and the cow. So you've got there's a price to be paid if you're going to carry the calf. And then the $15.77 was the total cost of protein for those 90 or so days. So if you look at that bottom line, you can see our costs were about nearly $20 higher if we fed protein, and then you're going to work up even higher if you've got a calf at side. We look at the cost or the revenues and returns. If you look at the very bottom line, it's probably where things are most critical, and you'll see the number in yellow. If we were to sell the calves at weaning at that particular date, the system that had the greatest return would be to wean in August, not feed protein in the winter, $337 return. Next most profitable was to wean in November and feed no protein during the winter. And that's about $332. So you can see that there's some effect on decision making here that could influence the returns on the ranch. One of the things that does not look particularly good here would be to wean in August and feed supplement during the winter. And those cows are just pretty high condition with or without the supplement. We follow this through a little bit. We can go to the feedlot and just look at what happens. One of the big impacts on the cost of this thing is just days on feed. And if you wean later and you're going to finish the calves, you're going to have to add extra days usually because of that. We look at just the data through the feedlot. We have some interactions, which means that we had to look at early weaning with protein, late weaning with protein, and without. If we look at those, this was something that really jumped out at us. If you look over on the late wean, which would be the L with the S or NS, we had about 100 pounds difference in live weight on the steer coming out of the feedlot. Just a huge impact. If you look at daily gain, our highest daily gains were with calves weaned in November and fed protein supplement. Now keep in mind, we're talking about things that were done to the cow and it's still affecting the calf in the feedlot. If you look at the hot carcass weight, if you look at that far right when we were weaning in November, we had a 60-pound difference in carcass weight. The only difference in the way those were treated was 90 days of supplement to the cow before that calf was ever born. And yet we've got a 60-pound difference in carcass weight, 100-pound difference in live weight. If we look at the cost, I've got to carry through on total cost. Why don't we go to the next slide? Go ahead. And if you look then, following it through the feedlot, the most profitable system now, or the one with the highest returns, would be to wean in November and to feed protein during the winter. Keep in mind, that's different than if we sold a weaned calf. It was more profitable probably to not feed protein, wean earlier, if we were selling weaned calves. Now, these numbers were before we used prices of cattle before the markets turned up. They'd be a little bit different if we plugged in dollar fat cattle, I'm sure. Another study I wanted to just show you, this is another application of weaning. This was with our June calving cow herd, so these cows are calving in June. Dick Clark and I had been working with a concept of extending grazing through the year. Our thought was is that as we extend grazing, that we reduce feed costs and labor costs. We have basically, with this cow herd, we're to a year-round grazing system, but we were interested in extending grazing for the calf. So we looked at weaning date and supplement as a way to extend weaning or grazing days for the calf. What we did then is we weaned half the calves in January. We weaned half the calves first April. So these calves that were weaned in April were about 10 months old when we weaned them. We left them out on winter range, just strictly range. And then we looked at the impact of the supplement on the dry cows. The thing about the... Oh, thanks. The amount of supplement we fed the lactating cows was about 2.5 pounds or 5 pounds every other day. We brought the cows in. They were in a 1,000-acre pasture. We individually fed the cows, so we know that's what they ate. And then the dry cows that were receiving supplement were about 1 pound a day of a protein supplement. If you look at the cost then, we've got about a $63 cost to winter the cow and calf if we left them together. If you just look at the cow cost, it's about $46 to winter the dry cow, unless we feed protein, and then it jumps up to about $55. We did not see any effects in any of these treatments with pregnancy rate. The cows we left the calves on, the dry cows, with or without protein, pregnancy rates were the same. So I won't show you that. Now if we look a little bit further on and look at some of the economics, we took those calves to grass. Our June calving system is a nice yearling system. You wean, the calves can go to grass, and they come out in September, go to the feedlot. It's a very nice cow-calf yearling system. If you look at that bottom line then, we've got 2 years of data, 1999 and 2000. Break-evens, if the calves were in the dry lot over winter, were 77.14. Now keep in mind that you've got a higher feed cost, plus you've got a yardage cost, some kind of a cost if you're dry lotting them. Our only cost for the calves that were on the cow was the cow cost plus the additional grass cost. And that works out to about $25 for those 3 months for the calf. So the break-evens on the calves that were wintered on the cow, about $9 lower than the calves that were wintered in dry lot both years. We followed them through the feedlot. Even after we followed them through the feedlot, there was still about a $3.50 difference in break-even cost. So it looks very practical to just simply keep the calf on the cow, use some supplements. We can actually lower the cost of wintering the calf, which translates into a greater net return or a lower break-even cost. The last study I want to show you, am I doing okay, Ivan? The last study was one that Trey Patterson had worked on us with. He's now at South Dakota State. You'll hear from him a little later. But we had worked with a commercial ranch looking at some programs to background heifers. In this particular study, we used about 1,000 heifers in each of 2 years. They were bred heifers that had been coming to for their first calf. We started a supplement program for them in September, and we followed that through until calving. As we got into the winter, we increased the amount of supplement, and they increased the amount of hay that was fed. So in December, I believe it was about 5 pounds of hay. When we got to about 1st of March, they were up to about 15 pounds of hay plus the supplement. Now, the supplement treatments, both of them received the supplement. What we looked at here was the type of protein. And we looked at meeting a crude protein requirement or a metabolizable protein requirement. And the difference is the metabolizable protein requirement takes into account the protein that's available at the intestine. In other words, this is the actual protein the animal can use. Not what's in the diet, but what's actually available for the animal to use. Okay, I'd remind you, as you look at this figure here, we're working on that time period where the forage quality is pretty low. Now, in this case, we actually had a pretty good estimate of the escape protein and the degradable protein. So we're trying to take these heifers through a period of pretty low forage quality, but remember what's happening to them while they're going through this period. Remember that requirement's increasing because that fetus is growing. So during the period, we've got a forage that's doing this, and we've got a requirement that's going up. So as we looked at feeding these supplements in, let me just maybe a couple of things that might be important. These heifers weighed about 790 pounds when we put them on treatment in September. The condition score on them was about 5.8. When we got around to calving, condition score was about 5.2. At weaning time after the heifer had had her calf, it was about 5.3. So there were no differences in condition or weights amongst the way we treated these cows. These were the supplements. The big difference is when we looked at metabolizable protein, you've got to have something that bypasses the rumen. We used feather meal. And by putting the feather meal in there, we could actually increase the supply of protein at the intestine or the protein available for the cow to use. One of the things that I'd comment on before I forget is that there's a nice substitute for feather meal right now, and that's distiller's grains. Distiller's grains are about 65% escape protein. I believe feather meal is about 80. So we've got a very inexpensive or a more inexpensive source to meet this kind of a protein requirement. These are the pregnancy rates. We were at two ranches, had about 500 heifers at each ranch, which 250 on each treatment. If you look at the MPR, it would be metabolizable protein. The CPR would be the crude protein. At the Ashby Ranch, pregnancy rates were both 95% the first year. The second year, the metabolizable protein was 95, the crude protein 88. If you look over at the Whitman Ranch, the pregnancy rates were lower than the Ashby Ranch both years. But in both years, we got a nice increase in pregnancy rate by meeting the metabolizable protein requirement. Very nice increase. Followed this through and looked at the economics. And the nice thing about this, I did put all this economics and data in the red book. You can go and look at the numbers. I won't try to go through it. But if you just look at the bottom line then, that at Ashby Ranch, that first year, it was basically a break-even sort of thing. We didn't affect pregnancy, so you had the added cost for the feather meal. But look, if you look at those other three locations, we significantly increased the value of that heifer by feeding protein. And by feeding the right protein, that's what I would emphasize, is that we fed the right protein, met all her needs, pregnancy rates were increased. Thank you.